This is your host, Michelle, and you're listening to Old TV with a New Twist. Let's see what classic television show we're watching and talking about this month. Everyone, and welcome to episode 65 of Old TV with a New Twist. Today, I want to welcome back for her third time my co-host, Emily.
Hello.
How you doing, Emily?
I'm doing pretty good.
You excited?
Yes, this was excellent.
We had a little difference of opinion at first.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, I didn't watch the whole episode. And then after I did, I texted you and was like, I was wrong. This is really good.
Yeah, Michelle is all like, oh, I don't know about this one. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is great.
I was a little premature in that, Emily. But anyway, we are talking about The Rifleman, which was requested by our listener, Matt.
Yes, this is very high quality TV. And I am not a fan of Westerns, but I thoroughly enjoyed this. I can see why this was so popular back then.
So I usually ask, like, what is your history with the show at this point? But before we did this podcast and Matt suggested it, you had never given this show a second thought, had you?
No, I hadn't really heard of this, but Matt heard I was on this show and he's like, oh, you guys should do an episode on The Rifleman. And I believe he said one of his parents watched it in reruns when they were a kid. And then Matt, I think he saw it on TV Land or something when he was a kid. So I was like, okay, well, that sounds pretty neat. Mm-hmm. I usually trust Matt's taste.
Yeah. Well, this was really good. Thank you, Matt. Let me just give you some stats of the show. It ran for five seasons from 1958 to 1963, 168 episodes. That's a nice run. And the premise is it's the adventures of a Wild West rancher named Lucas McCain and his son, Mark.
Basic setup.
Basic setup of the whole show, not this episode. But okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about the characters and the actors who played them. And I always like to list the IMDb credits. Yeah. To me, that tells a lot. I was very impressed with all of the IMDb credits.
Oh yeah, these were
of this show.
Veteran actors. A lot of them had careers the adults anyway had careers going back to like the 30s.
Yeah.
And like continuing into the 70s and 80s.
It was great. First, Lucas McCain, the main character, Chuck Connors, 138 credits.
Very impressive. And Chuck Connors had a very interesting career. When I was reading about him, I had actually only seen him in one thing before this. It's this really garbage TV movie from the 70s called Night of Terror. It's a really bad movie. Don't watch it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that was the only thing I had ever seen him in. So anytime I thought Chuck Connors, I imagined him in this pink 70s leisure suit. Before he got into acting, he was a baseball player. And in fact, his name, Chuck, he got it from when he was a teenager. Anytime someone would go to throw the ball to him, he'd say, yeah, chuck it to me, baby.
Wow. He's a pretty well-known guy. Then we have Mark McCain, his son, he was 12 years old at the time.
He looked like nine or 10.
Yeah. He was played by Johnny Crawford, who has 61 acting credits. He was an original Mouseketeer.
Yes.
In 1955 with like Annette Funicello.
Yes, I saw that. And then by the end of the first season, they cut out like half of the Mouseketeers and he didn't make the cut. But yeah, I was like, wow. Yeah, had a lot of acting credits in Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, his last credit, I believe it was a movie from 2019.
Oh, wow.
Called The Marshal. And it's interesting. It was a Western and he played William S. Hart in it. And William S. Hart was like a big cowboy star during the silent era. So it's interesting that this kid ended his career playing one of the most iconic Western movie stars.
Yeah. And he won an Emmy in 1959 for his portrayal of Mark McCain.
And you know what? It's well deserved. I tend to be allergic to child actors, especially, you know, in the 50s. So I was, golly gee, Dad. Like, and the kid actors tend to be, in any period, tend to be stiff and bad. Not everybody is Haley Joel Osment. But I thought he was very natural,
good. Okay, so the next character is Vernon Tippert. And he's played by Dennis Hopper.
I know. I actually didn't realize that until you told me, and it blew my mind.
Yeah. Well, he's got 208 acting credits, Dennis Hopper.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Long career.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I'm looking at this guy, and he's really young. And I'm like, who is this guy? I know this face. And I'm thinking, it looks like Montgomery Clift.
He does.
And then I'm like, wait, was he dead yet in 1950 something? You know,
he was alive.
And then it hit me. And, you know, IMDb is a classic TV person's best friend.
Oh, yeah.
Look it up. I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's Dennis Hopper.
His characterization was so interesting because usually when you think like a sharpshooter in a Western, you think of someone pretty tough, but he's like a wounded puppy.
He's got a little baby face. Yeah.
I know. He's so cute. I was like, oh, you precious little thing. I felt he looked like he wanted to cry like every scene.
He was the sharpshooter, but he was not intimidating at all. We're going to talk about who was intimidating.
All
right.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But he went on to do like Speed, Blue Velvet, Cool Hand Luke, and
Easy Rider. Oh, but you forgot the most important one, the Super Mario Brothers movie from 1993.
I remember seeing him in something when he was a much older man. He always played a bad guy, though.
Oh, he was good at it, which is why this is so weird, because it's so opposite.
Yes, he's really not the bad guy at all. So the next character is Judge Hanavan, and he was played by Sidney Blackmere. He has 178 acting credits. He plays a good guy, but I'm like, why is his voice creeping me out? Do you know why?
Because he's in Rosemary's Baby.
He was the bad guy. He was like
he
the
was
man
in yeah. charge of the coven in Rosemary's Baby.
Yes.
Yes.
And I didn't know why, but it's like that voice. Oh, my gosh. That voice is really making me, it's making my skin crawl. And when I looked it up, IMDb, I'm like, oh, yes.
I know. That blew my
so
mind, too.
He was so creepy in Rosemary's Baby. Him yeah. and Ruth Gordon.
Ruth Gordon. I know. Ruth Gordon might be creepier than him. Like,
great actress, though. Oh, gosh. She's great. I love Ruth Gordon. Okay. So next is Wes Tippert, who is Vernon Tippert's uncle. This is Dennis Hopper's uncle. He was played by Charles Arndt. 133 credits. All these people, great careers. But one thing is, none of them really had other iconic roles, with the exception of maybe Easy Rider, that they were known for. But it was a ton of episodic television.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Every show on the 60s, 70s, 80s, they were on. Every show.
Yeah, they were like working character actors. Even
exactly.
in their movie careers. Because like the uncle, he was in Ball of Fire with Barbara Stanwyck and mm-hmm. Gary Cooper. I love that movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's one of the supporting characters.
Yeah.
In it. So these were people, they weren't famous, but they were dependable working actors.
Okay, now we get to Jim Lewis, the villain
the
of
baddie.
The piece. He's played by Leif Erikson, 149 acting credits. His, I put on here, I was so impressed because literally going through his acting credits, because once again, nothing big that he starred in, but every show you can imagine from the 60s and 70s, he was on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, of course, everybody's been on a Love Boat. Everybody.
Was his name actually Leif Erikson? Or is that a stage?
Like, I don't know.
Is it supposed to be a reference to, like, the Viking guy?
It would have to be, right? And then the last one is Sheriff Fred Tomlinson, who was played by R.G. Armstrong, 184 credits.
I know, like, these people.
Yeah.
Like,
tons of episodic work. Many of them, he's the sheriff or a captain in a military thing.
Maybe there's just something about him.
The proverbial sheriff.
Though in this show, he's like the most useless sheriff of all time.
Literally to a point where Lucas McCain tells him, why don't you just take off that badge?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to talk about season one, episode one. And the episode is titled The Sharpshooter.
You know what's really interesting about this? This pilot episode was originally just a standalone episode on an anthology series called Zane Grey Theater, which was apparently headed by Dick Powell.
Yes.
Which shocked me.
And Aaron Spelling was heavily involved in Zane. He did a lot of the writing for Zane Grey.
Yeah.
And did you also know this script was originally written for
Gunsmoke? Yeah, but they rejected it.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that something? Okay, so it aired September 30th, 1958. You know who was president? I always ask this.
Eisenhower?
Yeah. You always know.
Not okay. always. Not necessarily.
Okay. So let's get into the episode. I'm so excited.
I know.
Was a great episode.
This was good.
The opening. Right off the bat, the way Chuck Connors looks right into the camera. Did you notice that?
Oh, yeah. Just that thing with him and the gun.
He's doing the gun. Like he's got this rapid fire rifle, but he just kind of looks right into the camera. Was it cheesy or was it menacing? I can't tell.
I didn't think cheesy or menacing. I think you're supposed to think he's a badass.
Yeah, right. He's just looked in
like
the camera.
With his custom, it's a Winchester rifle, right?
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
know anything about guns.
Yes.
Just
me either.
Off the bat, if I get anything wrong, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's anachronistic. The show takes place in the 1880s, and the rifle he's using is specifically an 1892 rifle. I doubt anybody other than hardcore gun nuts would really care.
Care, right.
Yeah.
So this first scene we see is going to set up the story, kind of. You want to tell us about this first scene?
Yeah, it opens with the antagonist. It's Vernon Tippert, his crazy uncle, and Jim Lewis, and they're eyeing this ranch. Mm-hmm. And they really want this ranch, but they need to get money to buy it. So they're going to enter a contest that has a cash prize. And to show that Vernon Tippert is a badass with a gun, they have him shoot a sign, and he shoots like a perfect circle, this very small, narrow circle. And it's like, ooh, that's the opposition. And then we cut to Lucas McCain and his son Mark, and they're riding out, and they check out the same ranch later. Right,
the Dunlap Ranch.
The Dunlap Ranch. Okay. And you know, okay, so there are two cows just wandering the ranch, and Mark kind of messes with the cows. Do you get the cows with the ranch? Is that part of the deal?
That's what I said. Yeah, I said apparently this ranch comes with stock. It comes with the cows. And the dad, Lucas McCain, picks up the grass and smells it. And he's like, okay, good enough.
This is some good grass. Yeah.
Yeah, like, okay, good enough. But the main thing is when the sharpshooters meet with Jim Lewis and he shoots and he says, okay, you know, he's going to win. The uncle, Wes Tippert, says, okay, I get the $500 prize plus a percentage of the bets.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of important here for later. So they think he's going to beat everyone. He's going to win the cash. And this is almost like a pool hustler kind of thing.
Jim Lewis is
they're
going to
con everybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we meet Lucas McCain and his son, Mark, and they're looking at the land. And you can tell they are coming here to start a new life. You know, you get the feeling because the little boy's kind of sad. And the dad says, you know, no sense looking back. And he goes, I'm just remembering back.
Yeah.
Like, oh. They head into town to inquire about the ranch they want to buy. So when they ride up to the hotel, which is called the California House, and it has rooms with meals and a sign announcing a turkey shoot with cash prizes. So he's going to enter the turkey shoot to win some money to help them buy this ranch.
Yeah.
So they go in to get a room for $2. Judge Hanovan is there and Sheriff Tomlinson. So he enters the contest. The winner gets $500. Now, we looked this up because I said, man, $2 for a room with your meals. So we said, I wonder what that would be now. And we assumed it was like 1870. We looked up 1875. So for a room for $2 in 1875 would be $55 today, which is still not much.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And winning $500 in 1875 is equivalent to $14,000 today.
That is impressive.
So that would help him buy the ranch. But in walks Wes Tippert and his nephew, Vernon, who is Dennis Hopper.
So yeah, Vernon, like I said, he's like a little wounded puppy. Yeah. Uncle is just running his mouth off. He's the most obnoxious person. Mm-hmm. He kind of sounds like a cartoon almost. Yeah. Like, rah. Like.
And this is his nephew. And you get the idea, okay, this nephew's parents died and this guy took him in and said, I'm going to drag him around the country and he's going to support me.
He exploits him. He mooches off him. You get the sense that it's an abusive relationship because he's kind of scared of his uncle, which makes you wonder like what goes on. And that's why I thought it was so touching. He goes into like the dining room area and Mark is just sitting at a table checking out the menu and he sees Vernon and he goes, hey, you want to sit with me? Yeah. And then Vernon just jumps on it. Like, and he's
like
happy.
He wants a friend.
It's like the new kid at the cafeteria. It's like, oh, the cool kids haven't invited me to their table. Like, it's like weirdly touching.
Yeah, it really was. But of course, because Wes Tippert, the uncle, has been promised a portion of the betting, he wants everybody to bet on this contest. So he wants Lucas McCain to bet. And he says, no, I'm not a betting man. And he's like, the way I figure it, a man who won't bet ain't no man at all. So he's trying
to bully him,
to like entice him, but yeah, not Lucas McCain. He's not taking the bait here.
Yeah, because the other guy's trying to insult his manhood more or less, whereas Lucas McCain is the real man in the room.
Oh, Lucas was the coolest.
He's unflappable, even when he's under pressure. Like, it's very impressive.
And this is where Judge Hanovan gives McCain the lowdown. The only thing Jim Lewis doesn't own in this town is my cook and this building. Like, beware of this big dog, Jim Lewis. He's the one that we saw earlier fixing the thing for them to win.
What exactly is Jim Lewis's like official title? Like, what is he? Like,
he's not the sheriff. He's not the mayor. He's not anything.
He's not a politician.
He's just a bad guy.
I know he's like a criminal, but he doesn't seem to have a gang.
He's got that one guy.
Yeah, but if it's only two people, is that a gang?
Yeah, I'm like, why don't they just take him out?
Like, that's just the thing. What does he have over everybody else?
Right. I don't know. And we never find out, really.
No.
So, Vernon Tippert and Mark McCain are bonding over their beef stew, which I make a mean beef stew.
Mean beef stew.
And they're sharing about their lives. And Mark's mother died a few years back, we find out, and it's just him and his paw. And Vernon doesn't have parents either because his uncle's dragging him around.
But I like that. I think it's fitting that Vernon bonds so much with Mark because he's an emotionally stunted person. He's kind of childlike himself, even though he's like 20, 21 years old.
Mark's probably more mature than Vernon at this point.
Because
he's very stunted, yeah.
He has a good father figure in Lucas McCain. Yeah. Whereas, what has Vernon got? He's got Wes, who screams and shouts all the time and is an idiot.
And looks to be like an alcoholic, too.
Kinda. He's an alcoholic. Yeah. He's probably physically abusive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just going by Vernon's body language.
Poor Dennis Hopper. But anyway, they start talking and Vernon's talking about how he's a good shot and all. And Mark says, well, my dad's pretty good with a rifle. Where we come from, he's called the Rifleman.
Ooh.
There you go.
Title drop.
And the Rifleman is the greatest shot in the world, says Mark. But Sheriff Tomlinson is sitting by eating his stew, and he overhears this. So he goes, like, that's McCain. So McCain is apparently known.
Yeah, I was like, oh, has, like, word of him reached this area? Like,
yeah, so he's infamous or notorious or whatever the word. Which is the one that you're bad if you're known for?
Well, infamous is if you're bad.
Bad. Famous. His reputation precedes him. Let's say that. So word about McCain is spreading. So now people are betting on McCain.
And that's no good for Jim
Lewis. Jim Lewis owns the Last Chance Saloon. That's where the bad people go. The good people go to the California Hotel. The bad people go to the Last Chance Saloon. So people are coming in and betting on McCain now, and Lewis can't have this.
It cuts into his profits.
Well, yeah, he's got this thing set up. He's got it. It's locked up. But wait, what's going on now? We're going to find out. Okay, so Jim Lewis don't want this McCain coming in and winning this thing.
No.
He heads over to the California House Hotel where they're eating their stew. And first of all, Wes Tippert is hard to say.
Tippert. Yeah.
He sees his nephew sitting there with Mark and he's like, get up.
You can't hang out with the competition.
Yeah.
He literally isolates Vernon from other people. Like,
that's where you first really see the abuse, kind of.
Yeah, it's very dark. Because I always thought, oh, TV westerns from the 50s are probably pretty light, but this is pretty heavy.
It was very heavy. So Vernon has to get up and miss his pie. He don't get to dessert. He tells the waitress, I'll be back for my pie. I'm like, oh, he wanted to have pie with Mark.
I know.
So Judge Hanovan comes in with Jim Lewis. And we're going to have our first dust up here because Lewis is telling McCain, you know, you ain't going to win or whatever. He tries to get him to back out, right?
Yeah, they're constantly just making threats and bullying him. And they're doing everything they can to make sure he either doesn't enter or he throws the contest.
But what happens is Jim Lewis has a henchman. I don't know his name. And McCain handily beats up the henchman without breaking a sweat. And they don't like that.
No.
Because I get the feeling no one has ever stood up to Jim Lewis or his henchmen ever.
Well, I imagine a lot of his control in the town, if it's only two of them, it probably goes down to intimidation. Think everybody else, but yeah, I don't know.
We don't know the backstory here, how this happened. How did Jim Lewis, how is the sheriff afraid of him and the judge is afraid of him and he owns everything except that one property? But anyway, they go outside after this and the little boy, I felt so bad for him. He goes, Dad, are they going to keep us from getting our ranch? You know, and the dad says, the only thing that'll keep us from the ranch is if we can't pay for it.
Yeah. He's like, don't worry about them.
Okay. So next we're at the turkey shoot. You want to tell us about the turkey shoot?
I do have a question about the turkey shoot. So it's called a turkey shoot. So I assume they would be hunting turkey, but they're just shooting at like a bullseye.
Yeah. So there's a turkey in a cage just sitting there. But
do you get the turkey with the money?
I don't know. I said the same thing. Why is this called a turkey shoot? Why don't they just call it a sharpshooting contest? Because they were shooting at a bullseye.
Maybe the turkey is their mascot. I don't know.
I have no idea. But anyway, let's get into the action of the turkey shoot. Tell us what's happening.
Well, at the turkey shoot, you know, Vernon does really well. McCain does really well. But the sheriff goes up to McCain first before he gets to shoot. And he basically tells him, Jim Lewis kind of owns this town and he doesn't like people cutting into his profits. Mm-hmm.
And he never loses.
He never loses. Ever. And he says, I'm a really crappy sheriff. Yeah. I basically do nothing. I will.
He tolerates me.
He tolerates
so
me.
I get to stay. Like, in other words, he obeys.
He obeys everything. Yeah. And then McCain goes, why don't you just take off your badge? And he goes, oh, no. And I thought this was really interesting because it would have been easy just to make the sheriff a total coward. But he says, no, as long as I'm the sheriff, I can do some good. Right. I can't do a lot, but I can do some. And I thought that was very interesting. It's a little bit of moral grayness. Now, you could say he's just coping with the fact that right. he's a coward, but he is someone who does have ideals. He just doesn't live up to them and is cowed into not doing anything about them. Whereas right. McCain is going to kind of be in a similar position because Jim, you know, when the sheriff doesn't cow him, Jim Lewis is like, hey, we're going to kill your son.
He doesn't threaten to kill his son here. This is what gets to me, because when Tipper has his turn, Vernon, he hits all five right in the center. And then McCain tells his son, go congratulate your friend on his great shooting. So Mark goes over there. Now Lewis comes up and he tells McCain, only one man can keep that boy from winning. And if he loses, I'll kill him. He threatens to kill Vernon first.
Okay, I didn't catch that.
Yes.
That's
when McCain shoots and he gets all five in the middle. So now it's a tie. So they got to move the target back 20 feet and they're going to go again. Well, Tippert at this point is a nervous wreck. The uncle's like, get up there, you know, whatever. So he does five in the middle and one four in the middle and one off to the side. So then McCain gets up to shoot. And the little boy's confident. He knows his dad can get all five in the middle again. But that's when Jim Lewis really becomes a scumbag and walks over to McCain's son with his hand on his shoulder and the other hand on the gun. Like, I'm going to kill your son.
I'm going to put a bullet in this cute little child.
This little mousketeer.
I mean, I feel really dumb. I didn't realize he was talking about Vernon.
Yes, look at it again.
No, I believe you.
He said only one person can stop this boy from winning. And if he loses, I'll kill him.
Okay, you know, and that makes so much more sense. Yeah. Because McCain is like, well, what the hell is Vernon to me? He's just some guy.
Yeah, but then the second time when it's the son. Okay, so at this point, I was invested. I was so invested. I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, this little 50s Western is really a good story here.
I know. Because then McCain, for all his like integrity, he's like, my son matters more than people thinking I'm awesome. He matters more than even getting money for the ranch.
Yeah. So he does four in the middle and one like way out. So they win and they're happy and like, oh, we'll give you your $10 back that you joined with, which makes Jim Lewis a real stand-up guy, right? But this ain't over, Emily. This is where I get a little upset at Judge Hanavan, because they go back to the California house because that's where Lucas McCain and his son are staying. And the judge is mad.
Yeah.
And he's acting kind of like very ugly to McCain. And because he lost $3,000, obviously.
Yeah.
But McCain says, well, I want to talk to you about the Dunlap Ranch. He goes, it's no longer for sale.
I know.
I thought that was terrible. And I thought Lucas McCain should right there say, do you know what happened out there? Do you know why I didn't win? Because my son would have had a bullet in his head. He'd believe it. They know about Jim McCain. I was a little this much tiny bit disappointed in McCain for not standing up to Lewis in some way. Just scampering off with his tail between his legs, so to speak. He could have done something else, maybe. My husband said that too. He says, I'm a little disappointed he caved.
But it is a kind of complicated morality, because maybe he thinks, well, if I keep poking at this, they'll go after my son again. Maybe he feels there's only so much he can do. Like, one of the things in Sam Peckinpah films is kind of the individual versus a very corrupt society. Like, how can you keep your integrity in a society where everything is crooked and where the people in authority are crooked?
Well, there's a lot at play here. Well, let me ask you, at that moment, when he was going to do his last shot for the tiebreaker, and here comes Jim Lewis with his hand on the kid and his other hand on the gun. I mean, at that moment, like, were you like me? Were you like, oh my God, you know, really invested? And what did you think McCain was going to do?
I figured he was going to throw the match. There's no way they're going to blow a little kid's brain out on 50s TV.
But McCain is so tough and so cool and so awesome. I thought he'd find a way to win the match and still save his son. I figured, waiting to see that.
I figured it was the midway point, so he'd throw the match. But then I thought he would either find some way to expose Jim Lewis in a way where the authorities couldn't continue to play dumb about it. Like, I actually really wasn't sure. And that's part of why I really liked this episode. It kept me guessing.
So, okay. So me too. But were you disappointed in the judge here too?
Yeah, but I also expected it. Because if Jim Lewis owns like almost the entire town, and the judge earlier was saying things like, oh, we barely have trials, it's clear he really doesn't care. He cares more about money. He's upset he lost $3,000. He's not upset that Jim Lewis is making these contests absolutely unfair.
But why are they so, why is he so babyish and mad at McCain for not standing up to Jim Lewis when they don't stand up to Jim Lewis?
Because he's a hypocrite.
Yeah, thank you. That's what I was looking for.
Like that, yeah, like they're, like, that's the thing. The authority figures on this show do not come off as good. This does not come off like a thing where it's like, oh, trust in the judge and the sheriff, because they're not going to do anything. The only person McCain can trust is himself.
Yeah. Okay. So he's like, you know, I'm just going to leave this town. Maybe this isn't the place for us. You know, he's going to leave. And the judge is like, yeah, goodbye, you know, because he's being terrible. But we go back over to the Last Chance Saloon to see what the other side of this is doing. The bad side, Jim Lewis and Wes Tippert and all them. So what's going on there, Emily?
They basically eat each other. Like, there is no honor among thieves, more or less. You know, they're talking about all the money and the uncle's getting wasted.
Yeah. Oh, he's getting drunk. And we find out Jim Lewis didn't stand up to his word in giving the uncle his percentage of the bets.
Yeah. So he's all upset about that.
I can't believe Jim Lewis is not a man of his word.
Really now. Yeah. This guy that tricked everybody tricked me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they make a bet about a painting above the bar. And it's like, if you put a 45 bullet in the painting, like, Jim Lewis is like, I'll give you $400. I forgot the exact.
Yeah, I forgot.
But he's like, I'll give you money. And then the uncle's like drunk. And he's like, oh, yeah. And he, the moment he goes to shoot, Jim Lewis pulls out his gun and shoots the uncle in the gut. He, and then he collects everything. He doesn't have to share. It makes me wonder, what was, was Vernon in this scene?
No. Meanwhile.
Yeah, he wasn't.
So his uncle's getting killed at the saloon. Meanwhile, Vernon Tippert goes over the to the hotel because he wants to know if Lucas McCain threw that match.
That's right,
and
yeah.
Why. He wants to win fair and square, I think. Don't throw it to me. I want to win.
Because he does have some integrity.
Exactly. He's like, did you throw it? He wants an answer from McCain. Because Vernon's like, look, I don't want the money if you threw it. Well, Vernon wasn't getting any money anyway, but just then the henchman comes in to tell Vernon, come get your uncle's body. He's dead at the saloon.
And then
this
Vernon's
is
like, what?
Everything is going to change here. But before then, McCain says, he goes, you want an answer? You wet-nosed two-bit little punk. You couldn't beat me in a million years. So Vernon knows he threw it. He don't know why yet, but he knows he threw it.
Yeah.
But then Vernon says, well, so then the guy comes in and Vernon says, well, I got to go get my uncle. Like, he's going to go confront him.
Oh, yeah. And then McCain's like, yeah, no, you're going to babysit my son. And I thought this was kind of weird. He goes, if I don't come back, my boy is your responsibility. I'm like, I mean, I guess he doesn't really, they mustn't have any other relatives he can fall back on to take care of Mark. But I do think it's like, oh, this guy I knew for like 1 hour eating lunch, you are now going to be stepdad if I don't come back.
Okay, I know Lucas McCain is supposed to be the baddest guy on earth. But Lucas threw that match to save his son. But now he's going to go take Vernon's, for Vernon and Wes Tippert, who did him no favors.
No.
He's going to orphan his son to go do what? To avenge the death of Wes Tippert, the drunk?
That is interesting because, yeah, at the end he gets in this big shoot. Even though he's not a guy that's hot-headed.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem particularly vengeful. I don't know. Maybe he thinks he has to do this in service of the greater good. And now that his son is not in the line of fire, his son is, I was about to call it the Hotel California. at the California, he's out at the California Hotel. He's got Annie M and Vernon Tippert watching him. So he's like, okay, well, if anybody dies, it'll only be me. And this is in the service of the greater good to free the town from Jim Lewis's influence. I think he's confident enough in his ability to come back alive and have everybody else leave in body bags.
Yeah. But he don't know what he's walking into. And we find out because when they see McCain coming at the Last Chance Saloon, he has more than one henchman. They see him coming. They see McCain's coming in place of Tippert. Because they said, Tippert, come get your uncle. And I think they were going to kill Tippert. I do. I don't know.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So, but they see McCain coming. And they're like, well, good. We'll kill him instead. And he comes in. And Jim Lewis told his men, his henchmen, when they hand him the drink, like, start shooting. So when he walks in, Jim Lewis says, well, how about a drink? You know, whatever. And Jim and Lucas McCain's like, okay. And I'm like, oh, no, wait, don't take the drink. That's when they're going to start shooting. But what happens, Emily?
Oh, well, he starts shooting. He knew they were going to do that the moment they slid the drink over. So he's already on the ball with it. He knows not to trust these people. He's not a sucker.
Right. And he's quick with that rifle.
I know. And they have this awesome shootout in the bar. I thought it was shot so well. The direction, the camera placement, everything was so dynamic.
It was. And then at the end, I'm thinking, wait a minute. There's a shot coming from somewhere else. What, you know?
Yeah.
And who do we see? What do we see?
Vernon said, forget your kid. I'm going to come to the bar and be part of the shootout.
Yeah.
But then Vernon gets grazed on the wrist. And then McCain is like, that'll heal a little stiff. And he's like, no, it's fine. It'll be fine. Like, he's kind of in denial. I thought that was interesting,
because
too.
His only value is being a sharpshooter. And now we know he's not going to be.
Yeah.
Right. That kind of took that away. But they killed Jim Lewis.
Yes. They gunned down Jim Lewis and his entire gang at the bar. So the whole town is free.
Yeah. And so McCain has freed the town. So maybe Judge Hanovan will be nice to him.
Well, he does kind of soften up when he comes back.
Man.
Yeah, now
but that makes me mad. Well, like, okay, now you're useful to us. I'll be nice to you. Otherwise, I'm a pout and be a real butthole.
Well, what do you expect?
I
don't expect much from a judge or a sheriff or any of these people. They're in it for themselves.
They wouldn't stand up to him.
Nope.
So why are they mad at him for not standing up to him? I mean, I don't know. I'm going too deep into this. I'm too invested in this, Emily. I'm like, why are you being like that? But anyway, at the end, we have a little sickaloo, because, you know, we call an epilogue a sickaloo on this podcast. My sister-in-law, Laura, used to say that when she was little. And it's just the dad and the son saying, we think we're going to stay in town. They're going to get the ranch. Judge Hanovan decided he's going to let him have the ranch. And so I can only guess that they get the money from the shoot now.
Well, yeah, Jim Lewis is kind of dead now.
Yeah.
So, and then they found out it was fixed. So there's no reason to keep up the pretense anymore.
Right. Now, I always want to ask this, because this is about old TV, specifically classic TV. Was this show conspicuously old-fashioned, and why?
Well, obviously, there's no blood. I feel like a modern show, like, if let's assume they remade this, I feel like there'd be more blood. I mean, it's still pretty, it was more violent than I was expecting. For sure. That shootout at the end was crazy. I mean, yeah, it has a very, like, moral, like, it kind of has a morality play kind of vibe. I don't mean that as an insult, but it has, like, a wholesome lesson about standing up for yourself, doing what's right. Even though there was still moral grayness in there, it wasn't black and white.
And that is very conspicuously old-fashioned, because in a lot of these old shows, you come out of it with a lesson learned.
Yeah.
You don't find that these days. It's not about that. It's about entertainment, and that's it.
Especially later Westerns.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah. They tend to be a little bit more nihilistic and depressing and hard-edged, where this one had, it has a bit of, like, the edge that you see, I thought, in the spaghetti Westerns, where the West seems truly dangerous.
Right, right.
Like, these aren't cowboys going around singing. Like,
yeah, right.
And there's moral grayness with the authority figures. There's moral grayness with McCain's response to Jim Lewis. But it's not as horribly depressing as some of the stuff you get later.
And I find, like, especially, I mean, this isn't a Western, but, like, Little House on the Prairie. Michael Landon was going to teach you a lesson, damn it. You were going to learn a lesson in every show. You were going to cry and learn a lesson. All right. Look, I'm just watching this to be entertained. I don't need to be.
Yeah, apparently, though, every episode of The Rifleman, yeah, like, each one has a lesson. I just reading reviews of the show.
But yet you're not being beat over the head with the lesson. I think Michael Landon beat us over the head with lessons sometimes.
I've actually never watched Little House on the Prairie.
And so. I've watched it and I don't like it. I'm sorry for Little House fans out there, but I don't like it for that reason. It's a little heavy-handed. Like, Michael Landon, you're not going to make me cry. You're being a little too heavy-handed. You're not going to teach me a lesson. I will watch The Waltons. Thank you.
Yeah, like this, you don't have any moment where McCain sits down with his son. It's like, here's what we learned today. Like, you just kind of glean it from the action of the episode and what the characters do.
And you can learn it yourself. You're not hit over the head with
it. I think it respects the intelligence of the viewer.
Exactly. This in its way, was a sophisticated way to present this, I thought.
Yeah, no, this was very, very good. I thought the writing was very strong.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of that, overall rating, IMDb gave this episode an 8.5 out of 10 rating. Emily, what say you?
I would say I'll go with a 9.
Okay. I was going right along with them with an 8.5. I was invested. I was entertained. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I thought it was very, very well done. Everything across the board, like the acting was very understated.
Yep. Sometimes these older shows get...
Well, think of Dark Shadows.
Yeah, yeah. Can be cheesy, can be...
Dark Shadows, where everybody's like, my name is Maggie Evans.
Yeah, like, it just... This was melodramatic. There was no melodrama. It was just straight good acting. And that's why... We can talk about all these acting credits. These are all really great actors.
Fabulous.
These are seasoned professional actors.
Yes.
So really great.
Like, I can see why this was popular for so many years. And I did read rumors why it was canceled. Some people were saying, like, the dynamic between the father and the son was kind of changing because the kid was getting older.
Yeah.
Because he was, what, 12?
Yeah, so he was 17 when it ended. That's a whole different ball game from 12 and 17.
Oh, God, I hope he didn't turn into one of those rebellious teenagers.
I'm going to go and watch the last episode. I have to.
Yeah.
I have to see what it was like later. Okay, so the next thing we're going to talk about is our favorite character. Emily, who's yours?
Vernon. Like I said, I like the juxtaposition between he's a badass sharpshooter, but he's this hurt little puppy. He's almost like a child in an adult's body. And I just liked that vulnerability. And I thought Dennis Hopper was just excellent. I thought his acting was fantastic. And yeah, I could see why you thought he was kind of Montgomery Cliftish. He has that kind of soulfulness.
And he looked a little like him, I thought.
He does.
Yeah.
I never noticed that those two kind of do look alike in the face.
I am struggling with a favorite character here. So I wanted to say Lucas McCain, but yet he's a little too tough for my liking, a little too much tough guy. You know, you can soften up a little, Lucas. You know, you can tell the sheriff why you threw it.
I actually thought he was just soft enough. Lucas McCain was my second favorite.
I thought they could have softened him a little bit more.
Well, to me, he's only soft with his son.
Exactly. And maybe back in those days, the old Wild West, you can't be soft.
I think he's in a world where he can't afford to be soft, especially with someone like the judge. He especially doesn't want to appear vulnerable in front of his son either. Because the son kept saying things like, oh, he didn't throw the match. My pop would never throw the match. And then his dad's like, yep, see?
Yeah.
He doesn't want his son to take the wrong lessons from this, that you back down.
Okay, Emily, since we've talked through this, my favorite character is Lucas McCain.
All right.
Thank you for getting me there.
I'm so glad.
I wanted it to be him because I kind of liked him, but I had these little things. Okay. Did you have a favorite moment?
Yeah, I liked Vernon and Mark eating lunch together. It was very sweet. And I just love the moment where Mark says, oh, don't you ever feel sad not having a ma and pa? And Vernon just kind of looks off and goes, yes, I reckon. Because, you know, he's not even trying to hide it. He's like, I wish I had people in my life who cared about me.
Right. That was a very moving moment. And I think that's what made me like this show, is that you have moments like that. And then you have somebody threatening a kid's life. You have a shootout with, you know, people just shooting. I mean, it had everything.
It's not sentimental mush. It doesn't feel like some Disney Channel nonsense. It feels real and genuine and earned. And just the acting, like the kid actor is so good. I can't get over how good that kid actor is. He's not trying to be cutesy or like me.
Well, why did they kick him off the Mouseketeers then? I want answers.
There was like 24 of them, I think.
It was just
too
many.
And they were like, this is too many.
Ah, okay.
I guess
they kept Cubby.
He wasn't good enough.
My moment, I'll tell you, I like the moment where I saw Jim Lewis get shot. I was like, yay. I was wanted to do the wave, you know, like, yay.
Jim Lewis and the uncle getting it was great.
Yeah. It was a payoff. I didn't think Jim Lewis and his whole gang was going to get blown away end of this.
I was wondering if Jim Lewis was going to be a recurring antagonist on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then how can it go on without an antagonist? But I'm thinking, okay, obviously this man has held this town in this grip for a long time. He's got the judge. He's got the sheriff. He's got everybody. Is it just going to take one man to come in and change all that? I mean, is that realistic? Is that...
Maybe everybody else in town is just that incompetent.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Was a little... really?
It's a show. When you watch a movie or a TV, I can handle a certain suspension of disbelief. Everybody in the town is just really, really incompetent or cowardly. And that's a common trope in Westerns, isn't it? Like the one badass gunner comes in and saves everybody.
Yeah. He's the Clint Eastwood. He's the John Wayne. He's the one who always comes in. So, but it worked. I loved it. So we're going to talk about some trivia. And I found this cool. I don't know if you found this out, but Chuck Connors and Johnny Crawford, the father and son, recreated their characters of Lucas and Mark McCain for the 1991 movie, The Gambler Returns, The Luck of the Draw.
I did not know that.
You know how Kenny Rogers did those gambler movies?
No, I actually didn't know about these.
Yeah.
Is this like in the same universe? It's a crossover?
No, I don't know. It was a movie. But now I got to go watch the movie and see like in what context these two show up as father and son.
That is really interesting.
Isn't that great? I'm guessing like Kenny Rogers was a huge Rifleman fan back when he was young.
Oh, yeah.
So he's making this movie and it's a Western kind of. So he's like, I want Lucas McCain and his son Mark to come. But that's so cool. And then the only other one I have that we didn't discuss already is that in its first year, the show finished the season in the top 10 of all primetime shows that year.
I can see why. It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a Western, close to
the top.
There
were a lot of, I think, Western shows back then. Like, I was on Sam Peckinpah's Wikipedia, and they had a list of some of the Western TV shows he was involved with, and there was quite a few.
Right. Oh, okay.
I don't know.
I'm very stunted with that. All I can think of is Gunsmoke and Bonanza. So what do you have as far as trivia?
Okay, well, one thing I thought was really sweet was that Chuck Connors and Johnny Crawford actually were friends off screen. Connors was both an acting mentor and surrogate father figure to Johnny Crawford, and they remained in touch throughout the years. And then when Connors died, Johnny Crawford was one of the pallbearers at his funeral.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I thought that was actually very sweet. So I imagine a lot of their on-screen chemistry was probably buoyed by their off-screen rapport. Well, I had a few others. Okay, apparently the show was one of the first primetime series on US TV to show a single parent raising a child, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Well, now that you think about it, when you think of the 50s, it was a lot of family-oriented shows. Yeah, nuclear family. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty neat. And then here's my favorite bit of trivia. It was so weird. So, and I don't understand Russian, so I probably am going to get this person's name wrong. I apologize in advance. Leonid Ilyich Brezhnev, who was the leader of the Soviet Union between 1964 and 1982, was a big fan of The Rifleman and Chuck Connors. It was one of the few American shows they would have playing in the Soviet Union. And when Brezhnev came to the U.S. to visit like Richard Nixon in 1972, Nixon invited Chuck Connors to the party so he could meet Brezhnev because he knew he was such a big fan.
Oh, wow.
And apparently the Soviet guy just freaked out and was so excited. And when he was going back to his onto the plane to go home, he saw Chuck Connors in the crowd, you know, wishing him well. And he ran up to Chuck Connors and hugged him.
Oh, and they didn't do that back in those days. They were very stern.
There are pictures of it.
Yeah. Oh, really?
There are pictures of it you can find online.
This is fantastic.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty great.
So Chuck Connors and the Rifleman were helping out with international relations at this time.
I know. I think that's crazy. But
yes.
Yeah. And Brezhnev was telling him, you should come to the Soviet Union and make a cowboy movie. So that tickled me pink. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just weird to think of this head of a communist bloc country, you know?
I know.
Being gaga over the rifle.
I know.
Oh, man.
One more piece of trivia. Chuck Connors played Porter Ricks in the original 1963 Flipper movie. There's a connection between our two episodes.
There we go. Last time we did Flipper and then we did this. And we might have mentioned, I think we mentioned that too, that Chuck Connors played Porter Ricks. But sorry, he's not as handsome as Hottie McHotson, who played him in the show. I forgot the man's name, but he was hot. We know that. But overall, I have to thank Matt. I am so glad I watched this, Matt. I am going to go watch a few other episodes because I want to see what transpired in the town and then how it ended with the son all grown up. But I think the father-son relationship is at the core of it.
Yeah.
Which is great. You know, so you've got that little bit of family and you've got that, like, that heart to it. But then you've got this, you know, it's going to be a Wild West town and there's going to be shooting and there's going to be intrigue and there's going to be intense moments. Really, really good show.
Yeah, absolutely. I am honestly shocked that they never tried rebooting it because it's such a strong core concept. It would seem pretty hard to screw that up. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Actually, don't touch it. Please don't remake it. Don't do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, almost every show I talk about on this podcast, and even like we talked about Dark Shadows, there was how many Dark Shadows times they tried to remake it and then they had to make the movie and then they redid it. Flipper, how many times they tried to recreate Flipper? Yeah. They had the cartoon, they had the 1996 series or something. And, it, you know, almost every show I talk about has had a reboot or return to Gilligan's Island or return to, you know, back to the Beaver,
whatever. Back to the Beaver.
Back to Beaver or whatever. But Leave It to Beaver. No, they do it all the time.
Yeah.
And I sometimes they shouldn't.
I can see them trying to remake this and making it quote unquote grittier and more miserable and nihilistic and awful. Just don't.
And they ruin it.
And they ruin it. It's like, just watch the old one. You guys can watch a thing that's old. Just watch the old one.
Leave a classic be just what it is. A classic.
Yep.
Amen.
Yep, amen.
But thank you so much for coming today, Emily.
Oh, no problem, Michelle. I loved it.
Did you really? Okay, good. I'm so glad. And we'll see you back in no time.
No time at all.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Michelle, and thank you for joining us for this episode of Old TV with a New Twist. If you like this podcast, please subscribe to us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or on your Apple Podcast app. And join our Facebook group, Old TV with a New Twist Podcast Group, and tell us what you'd like to hear us talk about, and we'll keep you informed of what's to come. We'll be back next month with a whole new episode of Old TV with a New Twist.